This is the Morgan Report with David Morgan. For the latest in precious metals investing, gold, silver, the economy, and more, go to themorganreport.com.
David Morgan with you with the weekly perspective for the week ending the 2nd of February, 2018. Well, 1 month of 2018 is already in a record book, and away we go. This article is called, from the website Our Finite World, 9 Reasons Why Globalization Can't Be Permanent by K.L. Tiverberg. And this is an excellent article. I'm going to spend some time on this. And obviously, I think everyone should really probably even print this out or bookmark it. Is that powerful an article. So reason number one, the world economy needs to grow or it collapses. Once all the nations of the world are included in the world economy, one obvious source of growth, incorporating nations that are not yet industrialized in the world economy, disappears. There's a bicycle analogy that's very interesting, and I think it's a great analogy. You can look at that. And I'm just going to skim through this because it's 9 points and they're all important. Second point, the growing supply of energy products is extraordinarily important for keeping the world economy operating. And this curve is shown, obviously, with the uptrend in world population. And, of course, it is really, by the scale of this one, not showing it as exponential as it really is. But nonetheless, you can see that it is accelerating. One measure of how well the economy is doing is world energy consumption per capita. In other words, how much energy per person. On this basis, the world economy is already reaching limits. Very important point. She goes into this. Here's the curve of it. And you can see that. So this is something that's very, very well understood by some of us and not so much by, let's say, the majority. But nonetheless, here are the facts. You can look into that. You can look at the world per capita energy consumption broken out by nuclear, natural gas, oil, coal, biofuels, etc. Fourth reason, the reason why energy demand is not growing is related to increased wage disparity. This is a problem for globalization because globalization acts to increase wage disparity. And here is a great graph that shows ex-China and India, in other words, the world less China and India. It's basically flat. If you look at China accelerating rapidly, although it looks like it's starting to fall off some. world flat and then a big bump and then flat again and India increasing. So both China and India obviously are increasing, China more rapidly than India, as you can see. And she gives us this chart of the labor participation rate. And you can see that, you know, it's bottoming out here in 2015, 2016. It was up here in 2000 where the percentage was extremely high of the amount of people that were not in the labor force. And now there are more, but it's inaccurate in my view. And it's inaccurate to state what Trump said on the State of the Union as far as the lowest unemployment, lowest black unemployment, lowest Hispanic unemployment. That simply isn't true. Depending on the metrics used, in other words, depending on how you count. And the way those metrics are counted today are really inaccurate. All you have to do is do a cursory look at shadowstats.com by John Williams or this labor participation rate, and you can see that there is a great amount of a labor force that's just basically given up. And those people don't count in the official statistics, but they live, breathe, eat, and buy fuel regardless. So fifth reason, adding China, India, and other countries to globalization temporarily gives a boost to world energy production. This boost disappears as the energy resources of the newly added countries deplete. And again, a great chart here. China's consumption, India's consumption, world coal production, world GDP versus energy consumption growth, and the growth in energy consumption. Six, on a world basis, energy consumption per capita seems to need to be rising to maintain a healthy economy. This is true. Everything that we do, especially in a higher technology world and a higher consumption per capita world, where people are using more minerals, more wood, more natural resources to have a higher lifestyle, then you need more energy. And this is really pointed out many, many times, but I'll bear repeating it again. If everyone on the planet had the lifestyle of the average U.S. person, they would need about 4 more planet Earths. The reason being is that 5% of the world's population the U.S. consumes about 25% of the world's resources. So it's a very simple arithmetic problem. For everyone to have that much to themselves would take a lot more than it's available. And of course, this is something that can't be overstated, but yet it seems to be ignored. And of course, this is why there's this big push for sustainable development. Seven, the example of the Soviet Union shows that collapses can and do happen in the real world. The effects can be long-lasting and can affect trade partners as well as republics making up the original organization. And she's just done such a great job here. I really can't compliment her enough. But if you look at this chart of the former Soviet Union and three satellite nations on the per capita energy consumption, you can see that it peaked and then the collapse happened and then it fell noticeably. And of course, since that time of the last decade or more, slightly more, it has flattened out. You can look at the three largest republics in the former Soviet Union on a per capita basis. Again, the same type of curves. Number eight, today there seems to be many countries that are not far from collapse. Some of these countries are energy exporters and some are energy importers. So she goes through a few of these. And let's just look at a couple. Here's Greece, and this is energy consumption per capita. And then she does it on a nation basis with Japan coming down, UK coming down, Italy coming down, and Spain coming down. And the last one, ninth, leaders of countries with increasing wage disparity and unhappy electorates can be expected to make decisions that will move away from globalization. And this goes into a very interesting point. I don't want to be too philosophical here, but what we look at when we hear from the liberal side mostly about diversity and respecting everyone and that type of thing, what we really want, or what they may be implying, is that really the diversity of having a nation state with its own culture and customs and traditions and all that is a wonderful thing. We really don't want a big mix of everybody everywhere just kind of equally dispersed throughout the world and having one big blob. How uninteresting would that be? I mean, to have a nation state like Spain or Portugal or France or whatever with their own traditions, their own cultures, their own uniqueness, that diversity enriches us all. And some people call it nationalism, some call it fascism, some call it whatever. You can put whatever label you want on it. I'd prefer to think it through a little more deeply, that culture does matter and traditions do matter, and that the diversity of that makes the whole world a richer place. I mean, because of that richness, people love to travel because they like to see how other parts of the world live and what they do and what's important to them and get a different, more broader, more open-minded perspective on the world itself. So enough on that. The conclusion is well written. I'll just read the first paragraph. Having enough cheap energy for the world's population has been a problem for a very long time. When there's enough cheap to produce energy to go around, the obvious choice is to cooperate. Thus, the trend toward globalization makes sense. When there is not enough cheap to produce energy to go around, the obvious choice is to try to reduce the effects of globalization and immigration. This is the major reason why globalization can't last. And you can finish, and she says, of course, we live in interesting times as we do. So I'll finish off with the precious metals, as I do almost every week. And this is a Kitco website. Most of you are familiar with it. There's lots of places to get quotes, but Kitco is kind of the first and one of the best. We're having a rough day in the metals today. As you can see, gold's off almost $20 as I'm doing this update, and silver's off almost 70 cents. So gold's off 1.4%, and silver's off about 4%. Even platinum's getting whacked at almost 2%. Palladium's kind of hanging in there, but palladium's already started to sell off. I think the peak of palladium has occurred in January. Usually January is the best month for palladium. I've traded it for years. And the underlying equities in the mining sector are also getting pummeled quite a bit. And the February issue of the Morgan Report will be uploaded here in the next day or two. It will be up before the due date, which is the first Monday of every month, which is the 4th of February. And I just want to talk about a couple things. One is, you look at the January issue, I'm well aware of that. February isn't even finished yet. We are giving an opportunity to everybody to have a peek at what we like as one of our top speculations. So I want to show you that. We have a free e-letter that we have very many subscribers on, and they're pretty loyal. We thank them for that. And of course, we ask them to pass on any information to their friends and family if they feel the need to do so. But what we did was we interviewed a CEO of this what I'll call disruptive e-waste technology. And a lot of these people wrote in. There were probably 10 or 12 comments that we got from our members because we gave it to our premium members and not exclusively to our mastermind members, which is how it's actually set up. And they were all very positive, quite bullish. And that is available again. And you'll get it in the email if you're signed up for the free list, which is at themorganreport.com. Just the first name and email. Verify that it's you and you will be on the list. And of course, you can stay on or get off at any time you wish. There's no obligation. And this is something that some people will want and some won't. They don't want to make you aware of it because you'll basically hear it from the CEO. You'll know the company's name. You'll know everything about it. But I can't give you a refund because this is something that our higher end clients pay a great deal of money for. We're giving it to you basically at the same price as if you paid for the membership for a 1 month basis. And you can do with it as you will. So that's that. Let me move on to a couple more important, well, at least as important points to make. This comes from Russia Today. Cryptocurrencies crash after India vows to eliminate their use. We won't read you the whole article, but, those that know me know I'm not that particularly wound up on some of these cryptocurrencies, although I am intrigued by the blockchain technology, the distributed ledger, and how this thing is working its way through the technological advances that we see throughout the world. But the largest cryptocurrency, Bitcoin, dropped about 12% below 9,000. We know it got high as almost, I think, 20. It was up to, I think, 19,000. But very interesting article, and this isn't the only one. This is from Richard Heinberg, and Richard is a pretty good thinker. He does a great blog. I actually subscribe to his work and have read one of his books, at least. Why Bitcoin's value could eventually approach zero. I'm sure this is going to upset some people, but I think it's good to look at both sides. I certainly have spent most of my career looking at the left and the right, and I'm neither, or I don't consider myself either. But this is an article that would not make a lot of Bitcoin millionaires happy to read, but I suggest for your consideration that you at least take a look at it and absorb what he's saying in this article. I'm not even saying I agree with everything. What I'm saying is take a look and make your own decision. This comes from Reuters. German president warns on cryptocurrencies. German president on Thursday warned financial sector that it had a responsibility to prevent speculation and the formation of trading bubbles in the cryptocurrency market. So certainly this has gotten the attention of the powers that be. There's no ifs, ands, or whats about it. It is what it is, and I suggest that those of you that have huge gains start to move those gains somewhere. Take some profits. That would be my recommendation. And one more. I'll move a little bit off of the crypto thing. There's one more or two more articles I want to show you. This is, again, from Reuters. Bank of Japan's Kuroda urges cryptocurrency servicers to beef up security. This has been one of my main complaints, as everyone knows that listens to these weekly updates, is there is some security issues across the board, not just facing the cryptocurrency world, but across the board, meaning, everything to do with this high technology and a communications information age, where your private data that you think is secured, it may not be nearly as secure as you believe it to be. This is a huge area for investment, by the way. I haven't looked into it real hard as far as what the investment potentially best companies to invest in are, but they are, it's definitely an area that needs to be examined. And again, there are opportunities there. All right, just a couple more. This one's from Reuters. It seems like I'm not picking on Reuters. I just had a lot of articles this week. Blockchain to track Congo's cobalt from mine to mobile. Very interesting article. This is the type of thing that you can do with this blockchain. And Reuters reports blockchain is used for the first time to track cobalt's journey from artisan mines in the Dominican Republic of the Congo through to products used in smartphones and electric cars. I don't read the whole article to you, but it's something that I think you'll be seeing more and more utilized because it is a very good way to basically tag and track everything that was very difficult to do really before. So it's an electronic way to basically make a contract that can be secured and everyone can see it. It's a 2016 sustainability report. Glencore said it sourced cobalt in the Congo from outside its own production. It only dealt with third parties that did not use artisanal mines. So these basically free-for-all mines like this one, now with the blockchain, you get a lot better handle on how much is produced and where it's going. And I'll finish with this. And this is some of the questions I got about the cryptographic silver money, because a lot of people are a little confused about it. And this comes from the website. I'll just read the first couple of paragraphs, but this should hopefully quell some of the questions about what is it. The historical problem. Historically, silver has been utilized and recognized as a safe and sound form of money. The great empires of the past employed silver as a means to stabilize their economies and expand their territories. Unfortunately, silver's historic role as sound money has been lost through the evolution and growing use of paper currencies in the economies of the world. But unlike silver, paper currencies possess no intrinsic value. These fiat currencies can be printed without limits, absent of any asset to support them, thus resulting in increasing prices and a corresponding loss of purchasing power, frequent boom, bust, and bailout cycles, and a gradual disappearance from the middle class. With these concerns in mind, the emergence of blockchain technologies has inspired advocates for sound money to imagine a new paradigm, one where silver can be restored to the economic system and used by millions of merchants, consumers, and speculators as a durable and valuable utility to settle trade and commerce. Today, blockchain architecture is inspiring new and innovative business models, and many experts believe the technology will even empower new monetary systems and perhaps even disrupt the inflationary monetary money systems employed and mandated by today's governments, central banks, and financial institutions. So this is basically a silver-backed situation. It's not going to get outside of the purview of what the price of silver is, but it certainly will facilitate a means of payment and tracking that is afforded by the distributed ledger technology. So you can learn more about it. If you're not familiar with my reports, it's themorganreport.com. Just get on our free email list. I'll be keeping you updated as this situation starts to mature, and you are obviously willing to take a risk situation with this company. It's not my company. I'm only associated with it from the fact that I invested in it, and secondly, that I am spreading the word about it. But there are others. There's gold-backed cryptos, and there's some other silver-backed ones, I believe. And in this early startup type of situation, I think we still are with some of the cryptos, there's going to be a lot of changes. So you have to really stay on top of the game. But this is not a unbacked, I love the, you know, sort of a fancy name that's going to go from $1 to $1,000. Not that situation. This is tied to the price of silver. There could be an overvaluation of a token that is worth more in silver than, let's say, the current silver price. And that would present an arbitrage opportunity, and the market will bring it back into par very quickly. So it's just a way, really, to use silver in a monetary system. That's basically what it boils down to. So until next week, I will be back with another update.
This is the Morgan Report with David Morgan. For the latest in precious metals investing, gold, silver, the economy, and more, go to themorganreport.com.